Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 4 of 4J's and a Comic. With me, as always, is JP from Panamanga.com.
Shazam!
Justin from AskAMetalhead.com.
Hello.
And finally, Joe Vicious, also from Panamanga.com.
I was thinking I could do Black Adam, but no.
Also known as the Battle Axe.
What sound does a Battle Axe make?
Shwish. Shwish. Thunk. Thunk. Yes.
Broadsword Battle Axe.
Speaking of sound effects, we are going to be talking about a character who has probably one of the most famous sound effects in all of comics.
Snicked!
Snickety, snick, snick, snick. Which so is Wolverine. Good.
Yes.
You are listening from the future, where the Wolverine movie has now been out for about a week, but in our past, we're recording this the night before it opens.
So excited.
And with
not really excited at all. Sorry.
That's just sad.
I don't want to tell you, I'm not excited about it.
Who doesn't want claws? That sounds awesome.
We're hoping this one is a lot better than the first Wolverine movie from about 3 years ago.
That's probably why, because yeah. I wasn't really that intrigued. I mean, that movie, it just didn't do it for me.
So what I'm hearing through the review grapevine is that this is the, what were the exact words? I can't remember where this was, but it says something along the lines of, X-Men fans rejoice, this is the Wolverine movie we've been waiting for.
Ah, these are the droids you're looking for.
Yeah, so hopefully it's not miserable, but, you know, all signs point to awesome.
With that being said, we're going to take it back to the roots and actually start our review with the first Wolverine miniseries, titled simply enough, Wolverine. It's now been tagline Wolverine by Chris Claremont and Frank Miller, since there are now literally probably 1,000 other Wolverine graphic novels out there.
Also just titled Wolverine.
Yeah. And the question that we have tonight is, while the Wolverine by Frank Miller and Chris Claremont from 1982 is considered a classic, does it still hold up today?
Good question.
At the store, we literally own and have available for sale every version of this comic that's available. We have all 4 issues of the miniseries available in single
form. Do you now?
I have a copy of the 1987 first graphic novel that went for $6.95 when that was a huge amount of money. I have the premium regular sized hardcover of it. I have the regular sized trade of it. And I even have a ginormous collection called the Wolverine Adamantium Edition, which is how I read it, which is
glorious.
Yes,
it's how big is that?
It's 16 inches tall, 12 inches wide.
It's one book,
and there's 800 pages in it, which makes it a little over 4 inches thick.
So also incredibly heavy.
On the show notes, we're going to put a picture of me holding it. It weighs about 25 pounds.
And I picked it up thinking it was an empty box, and I was like, ooh!
That wouldn't work. I like to read, like, laying down, holding it above my head. This would not work for me.
I had to lay it out on the kitchen table and sit, like, in a high chair so I would get a good angle on reading
That's awesome.
And each of those gigantic pages are all just enlarged comic pages. Yeah. It is awesome.
Yeah, it's got to be.
That's like having a big screen comic.
Yes,
it is.
Sweet.
What I noticed initially was when I read it, I actually saved it for last, and I read it last night, was how much story they pack in to each issue.
Into four issues.
Like literally on my show notes in front of me, I have a page of notes that I did on the first issue. And I wrote, issue one opens with Wolverine tracking and killing an insane grizzly bear. He returns to Xavier's school to find letters to his paramour Mariko returned unopened. He goes off to Japan to investigate, finds out from an old colleague that Mariko has been forced into a marriage for family honor. He confronts her after she has been beaten by her husband. He is then poisoned by a shuriken. He fights Mariko's father, soundly beaten, left for dead on the streets of Tokyo, and the issue ends with Wolverine being rescued by a mysterious woman.
Yes,
that's a lot of
all in 35 pages. A good 5 of which were advertisements.
Yeah.
And it's
which
it's,
I loved.
Right? There's nothing cut out of the story. It's all there.
Yeah,
in detail. And the crazy thing is that each time, I mean, I think that Justin mentioned this on the previous podcast, is that at the beginning of each issue, almost an entire page is spent reintroducing you to where we are, who he is, what his abilities are, what his motivations are, what's going on right now, all that sort of stuff. And it's amazing that even though there's a pretty copious amount of retreading in the beginning of each one and a lot of advertisements throughout, there's still so much story in each issue. It felt like such a bigger book.
The recap was at the time the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics was named Jim Shooter. And his mandate was a comic to him could have been anyone's first comic. So he wanted someone who just picked up Wolverine issues 1, 2, 3, 4, could go there and within the first three pages know all the Wolverine's backstory, his powers, and what he does and what had happened.
Yeah, so every single one. He works in, you know, description of his claws, his healing factor,
right,
and does the I'm the best there is of what I do, and what I do isn't very nice tagline in every single issue.
And when did that tagline start? Was it this issue?
I'm pretty sure it was this. Sure, I don't remember.
And it was the opening line in this comic.
It may have been an earlier issue of X-Men, but I really remember this being the kind of that culmination.
It leaves quite an impression, that first page.
I mean, the first time I read this, I was 9 years old and 30 years ago. And I was, of course, blown away with it. Chris Claremont was the Marvel writer at that time.
Yeah.
And Frank Miller was just finishing up his run on Daredevil, and he was probably the most popular Marvel artist at the time. Mm-hmm. And they combined them up on this, on the Marvel's most popular character. But if you can just imagine at the time, it wasn't like today where Wolverine was in every book. He was literally in just X-Men. And it wasn't in every issue of that.
You know, how many ongoing comics do you have downstairs right now that have Wolverine in it? Just off
ongoing,
the top of your head.
Ongoing with actual Wolverine in the title?
Sure.
I believe four. Along with appearances in the Avenger books and
Other X books.
Yeah, and other X books.
So he's just everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first time that he really had, this is about Wolverine.
And the interesting thing was, when this miniseries came out, they pulled him out of X-Men, so he was only just appearing in this miniseries as it went on.
They mentioned that, though. Yeah, they actually mention it when he meets his old friend after he goes back to Japan, and the guy's saying, look, if you do anything outside the law, your membership in X-Men doesn't mean anything here. You're, you know, I'll have to take you down or whatever. So it was nice that that's a nice little nod, or, you know, a little, oh, by the way, he's in X-Men too. So I was introduced to Wolverine probably 87-ish. I was a little older. I don't remember. I mean, I remember buying these single issue comic books when I was old enough to have my own money and hang out at the comic book store. And I think you and I discussed it. It wasn't this series. It was the next sort of, wasn't there another release of Wolverine?
Yeah, when the ongoing series
started, right?
Which I think was like in 88. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's about when I got into comics, is right around that time. So I remember really liking Wolverine at the time. And after rereading all of this, I really definitely like it. It's such a different read from last week, what we were talking about. In episode 3, we talked about Hawkeye and how that's a little bit more, you know, it's a lot lighter, right? You still have all these serious things going on, but it was so much lighter than this. And so there's an interesting...
This was dark and heavy every step of the way. Yeah. Absolutely.
And a lot of text on the page.
Yeah, wasn't that more common?
Yes, it really was.
Oh, yeah.
And it took me probably longer to read these four issues than it did for the 8 issues of Wolverine Max that we're going to review later on in the podcast.
Right.
Yeah, I could only do like one of these a day.
Yeah.
And I was tired afterwards.
I felt like we got more for our money back then, we were.
Oh,
more for our 60 cents. We bought this off the spinner rack at the Safeway. That's where I remember buying it. They had a spinner rack and Safeway, and my grandmothers would go grocery shopping. I'd go over there to the spinner rack and read all the comics that were on there at the time. It's
your little library.
Yeah,
exactly. Nice.
Well, I remember a spinner rack at, what was it, the Thrifty Mart that had the slushies and ice cream over on Lincoln. Do you remember that, John?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember they had their little spinner rack of comics, and I remember seeing the Amalgam comics for the first time there and thinking, what? Marvel versus DC? How's that going to work?
How is that possible?
Yeah. Totally blew my mind.
But getting back to Wolverine, you guys want to go in about the story or?
Yeah, let's talk about the story first.
Starts with words.
A lot of them.
And ends with
Well, claw. I wanted to say, you know, you summed it up really, really well. There's a ton of story, but there's also, you know, I'm looking at a particular panel where he confronts his, you know, this woman, Mariko, who, and, you know, she's kind of in the dark and won't look at him. And finally goes, you know, you have to look at me. And finally she looks at him and her face is all beaten up. And it's really a punctual point. It's really you know, it's very,
it's a powerful moment.
Yeah. It's a very powerful moment. And so there's a lot of that in here. So not only is there a ton of story, but it's told very, very well, both visually and from the spoken word perspective, I guess is what we would say, you know.
The storytelling here is really masterful. You know, there's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful coming together of art and story. There's so much words, but I never felt like, oh, I have to read all this. I was eating it up like a good story. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like a good book.
Mm-hmm. I thought for the art, this is really when Frank Miller was on top of his game.
Oh man. Top notch.
I mean, and one of the things you see in Frank Miller's stuff a lot is really heavy use of shadow and silhouette. It's just amazing, especially towards the end, the fourth book, when he's fighting Shingen at the very, very end, and like the climax. There's all these, you know, these beautiful blues and all this beautiful color and, you know, lots and lots of shadow. And there's some scenes earlier where he's hunting down some of Shingen's guys and dealing. Shingen, Lord Shingen, is Mariko's father, who's very much the opponent in this story. And there's just these amazing scenes that are, they're just very, very powerful. And it's not all this copious detail. Right, exactly. There's the shadow overlays across people being afraid of Wolverine. And he's got such, Wolverine's great because more than many superhero characters, he has such an incredibly unique silhouette.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you get, well, at least before Iceman started having all kinds of crazy ice business on his head, but you get like young Iceman and Cyclops, you know, and it's like you can see the bumps around Cyclops' like temples, but other than that, they're both just dudes in suits, you know. But Wolverine has a very unique look, even without his suit, I mean, with the claws and this low stature, wide, I mean, he has a very unique look, and this has used such an incredible effect in this book.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Because it is something that you see in almost every single instance of Wolverine. He's always sort of hunched when he's in his fighting stance, is what I like to call it, sort of hunched, you know, knuckles sort of ready to go. Even when his claws aren't out, he does have that very same. And it's great that
he's supposed to be really little, right? Like just over 5 feet.
5'4",
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't expect it. You don't see it coming, right?
Well, there's so much visual language about him being animalistic.
Right.
Which plays into the story beautifully.
And, you know, between these, the couple of books that we're going to talk about, a couple of series, there's some confusion there for me about that. And we'll get into it when we get into those stories. But I think it's confusion from a person who is really coming into the world for the first time. Some of this stuff is sort of like, well, does he really enjoy this? Is it something that's primal for him? Because you get the sense that he doesn't really like the killing. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't want to kill animals, which I think is really great. He has a hard time killing women, obviously. You know, women seem to be his downfall in every aspect.
I sympathize with Wolverine the most is bad decisions around redheads.
Oh yeah. No kidding. I have a redhead problem too. But anyway, So on one hand, you have, you know, on one claw, you have this guy that he's a brutal killer. He's really good at what he does. What he does isn't very nice. But then you have this sense that he doesn't really take any joy from it. And only at the very, like sort of at the very outside of having to do it to save his own life or to save somebody that he cares about is where you see him really, that's where the gusto comes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I almost disagree a little bit. I feel like, and it's driven home pretty strong towards the end of this book, the whole deal with him is that he is very animalistic and he does take pleasure in these sort of things. And it's the duality of the animalistic nature versus the being a man and having the choice to change who you are and not be taken over by your nature and not be this aggressive animal that takes glee in fighting because that's how you're hardwired, because that's how you survive. He has a choice to be a man and make decisions that are peaceful and be more than just this vicious animal, even though there's this vicious animal kind of aspect of him that does enjoy killing, does enjoy scrapping, is what they say over
and that's what in 2 and 3 we see how he's pushed into making decisions where I'm more like an animal, I'm doing this animalistic thing. I'm hanging out with this ninja who's, we're going around just having fun.
Yukio, was it?
Yeah, Yukio.
Yeah.
And again, I think
and
maybe
killing hand ninjas, which always looks visually stunning.
Of course, yeah, and especially because they just poof into smoke at the end.
Yeah. All right, so I mean, I can see where you're coming from, but as we get through some of the other series that we talk about, hopefully maybe you'll see.
Oh, so you mean not so much this book, but not in comparison this,
yeah,
I'm to talking
about. Oh, yeah, and yeah. Totally. Yeah. In general, that's always been Wolverine's thing is, you know, am I a beast? Am I a man? Am I part of each? And how do I come to terms with being both? Or how do I get rid of one and be the other? And
so it's always this brains versus brawn kind of thing. He wants mm-hmm. to be, he wants to intellectualize some of this stuff, but it seems like in the end, it always just makes more sense to put his fist through somebody.
Yeah, I think that perpetually, poor Wolverine is always thrust into situations that end up being beyond his control, that force him to really indulge in that animalistic nature.
Freaking redheads, man.
But he always tries to, that's always a last resort.
Mm-hmm. It is, and that's why we like him. Because if he was just this vicious monster who was always bad and always awful,
he'd be Sabretooth.
Well, yeah, exactly. And
okay, Sabretooth is that's
Victor
the name
Creed.
Of the guy.
Okay.
Victor Creed. Okay, so, and that's the point I'll make when we get to Max. So when we start talking about Max, I might be getting ahead of myself.
But. Sure, I think that that's the most brilliant thing about this book, story wise, is that that duality of man versus animal and that fight inside of him. It made me think of that old anecdote of you've got two dogs inside of you, one who's angry and, you know, I mean, like one who represents one particular aspect of you and then another that represents the other. And which one you feed is the one that wins. It really had that, I don't know, that for some reason that popped up when I was reading this. This is so brilliantly done in this particular book because the two women in his world and the two women in this story that are so profoundly important to the progress of the story and where he is mentally and where he is with his personal journey of development of, am I an animal? Am I a human? Where am I? Where do I draw the line? What am I about? All that stuff. It's so brilliantly put together because each of the women represent kind of the zenith of one of those sides. They represent his motivation to be one way or the other. Mariko drives him to be more human, more humane.
Yeah, a good, peaceful man.
Right, exactly. And then Yukio is just this animalistic, like she is acts and tries to promote him to be exactly how he is if he just kind of sat back and let the river take him. You know, it was
right. Yeah.
His animalistic nature.
That's a great point,
she
man.
She digs into that. She loves that. That's who she is. She feels the same way and she acts the same way and she's trying to kind of get him to be that and get him to indulge in that. Whereas Mariko is not so much forcing him to be one way or trying to trick him into being one way because that's not how she is. She motivates him to be a better man than an animal. And I think that's what the whole book is about, really.
It's her love of that part of him that she holds up, right?
Each of the women love a completely different piece of him. Yeah.
That's great because it is. It's like if you split him in half, Mariko is very much that intellectual side and what's the, I can't remember the name of the
Yukio.
She's the sort of the other more brutal run across the roofs and let's go kill a bunch of hand assassins and, you know, let's go party basically bring it on.
Encouraging him to be drunk, encouraging him to make unwise decisions. She almost is suicidal at times.
Yeah, sitting on the train tracks.
Right.
Sex on the train tracks.
No, there wasn't any pulling of trains.
When you talk about it that way, the story is, how to put this?
You know, I didn't catch that on first read, but when you started to talk about it, I was like, holy shit, dude. Nailed it.
So there's a book that everybody who wants to either write or wants to just understand story better should read. It's called Invisible Ink, and it's by Brian McDonald. Invisible Ink is a pretty quick read.
INK or INC?
INK. The reason why it's called Invisible Ink is that basically it's him explaining and describing to you that you can see the story and the writing beneath the writing, right? There's the basic timeline of events, fact. But then there's what they mean on a deeper level, what they're trying to communicate, what the writer is trying to say. And that is communicated through those facts and events and how they line up with each other and how they interact with each other. But there's more often than not what Brian McDonald likes to call an armature, which in this case, he's meaning like the structure beneath something, Right. And so it's the kind of the, I learned something today, moral of the story, if you really want to get cheesy about it, but it's the deeper meaning within the story. And Brian's book is great because it kind of teaches you to look for that and how to find that. Mm. And he actually deconstructs a bunch of movies, modern and otherwise, that you will recognize and you'll be like, holy shit, I never thought of that. And that book has totally enriched my understanding of storytelling completely. And that's the reason I was able to pick that out. So check that book out. Anyway, long rant mm-hmm. about that. But yeah, so I think that's the point of this book, is the duality between his animalistic side. And it's realized in the women. It's realized in his actions. It's realized in the stages of the story. It's that's all like that. And it's that battle of what's going to win. And it's kind of personified in different situations. And he's constantly given a choice, constantly given an opportunity to decide, how am I going to react to this, like an animal or like a man?
Yeah, you're kind of spoon-fed that with Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility, and it's very upfront about what the framework of this character is. But, you know, Wolverine, just like all his stories, it's so much deeper. You have to really sink into it. You can't just gloss over it superficially like that.
Getting back to my original question.
oh, wow. 45 minutes ago.
Do you guys think that this book holds up 30 years later? For me, having first read it, like I said, when I was 9, and then rereading the trade in 88 when it first came out in the trade paperback form, then the last time I read it was probably a good 15 years ago. So it had been a while, so rereading it was pretty fresh again. And, you know, I remember the ninjas, but I didn't remember the exact plot points, other than, you know, it being a little more wordy than a normal comic.
Sure.
I think it still holds up with anything that's come out today.
I would absolutely agree. We were talking before the podcast recording, and I was saying that I feel like it has the flavor or the coloring, right, of the age of the time that it was created in. And you're mm-hmm. not going to get around that. It's always going to be colored by the time that it was created in. But you can have something that has that flavor or is that, you know? And mm-hmm. the example I came up with was a band that I feel like manages to maintain being themselves throughout a pretty long career is Nine Inch Nails. Nine Inch Nails sounds like Nine Inch Nails in the 80s and now, or, you know, the most recently. It still sounds like Nine Inch Nails. It has a kind of a flavor of the times, and it sort of moves and grows, but it still sounds like Nine Inch Nails. It doesn't sound like an 80s band, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And then you've got pop music, conversely, that always sounds exactly like the time. And that pop 80s music is going to sound like 80s music no matter what. You can turn it right on and go, oh, that's from the 80s.
Yeah.
But really good bands, really good music that's timeless, that is what it is and has something unique to say, will sound like themselves more than they sound like the time that it was recorded or created. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that's what this reminds me of. It reminds me of something that is such a rich and powerful story that, yeah, of course it has elements that are popular in that time. It's colored by the time that it was created in and that it came out in. But at the same time, it's such a incredibly fully realized vision and a really good story that it still holds up, and it is its own unique animal in and of itself, you know, pun intended.
Actually, aside from a couple of the fashion things, like the pantsuits and the
bell bottoms.
And the bell bottoms.
Which even in 1982 weren't in style.
Yeah, you could fix up some of the coloring on this, sharpen it up, and you would not be able to tell that it was written in 82.
And the Animanium collection version I did, it did look like they updated the color. I mean, they didn't add like the full Photoshop effects, mm-hmm. but it looked like they updated the coloring, and it looked very, very good that way.
Did it have that newsprint look? Like,
no, it didn't have the newsprint look.
Interesting. I want to see that.
This has the news. That's exactly, that's a perfect way to describe it. Newsprint. It looks newsprint to me. That would be the only thing. And his costume, he does have a costume in this, and it seems like more recently what I've seen of the
was his 80s costume. Yeah. The brown
kind of brown and gold.
Yeah.
But the newsprint, God, that's such a great description for that. Because when I first started reading this, I was like, "Oh, I remember this!" Like, it brought me right back to the very first time I opened up a comic book. And then the other thing that sort of helped with that was the ads every few pages, and how
the ads were so enjoyable.
Well, like the Lego, you know, like the Lego ad or
the D&D ad that is actually like half of the page is actually some frames from a comic. Yeah. And then it's no way, just kidding. Order D&D advanced. Exactly.
Or the, you know, big giant bubble yum, or, you know, John and I were talking about this earlier because we both remember the movie Megaforce, which if you watch it now, you're just like, oh my God, it's horrible. But at the time, we used to make up our bicycles to look like the motorcycles in Megaforce so that we could have rockets on the front of our bicycles, you know, and we take a playing card and a clothespin and you could clothespin the playing card to the frame of your bike that when you rode your bike, it sounded like a motorcycle. And you'd have to carry a couple of them with you because you'd always inevitably tear the card, but, you know.
So, I mean, I think, John, just to kind of answer your question, I feel like it does hold up. I agree with you completely. Yeah, there's definitely a sense that it came from the time that it came from, especially when you're looking at sort of an original printing of it, and it has that the printing of the time sort of look as well. I'd be interested to see that book that you have.
Yeah. And then the new printings of the new trades, the cover's been updated, nicer paper. And and then the other thing that the newer versions of this trades did, they add two more issues in it, basically the follow-ups from the X-Men stories.
Oh, cool.
And
so it has chronological
wedding right after it. Yeah, the
wedding and all that. And so if you pick up the trades or the hardcovers, you get a little ending of the story where the graphic novel, the four issues of the miniseries is kind of ends very suddenly to be continued in X-Men.
Right. Hmm. I guess one last thing I want to say before we move on is in regards to the art, and that there are so many unbelievably awesome, iconic poses and movements and just frames in this. There's many things I'm like, I want that on my wall. I'd like that as on, you know, I thought it's like a poster of that and that. Every single page,
The issue one cover is so iconic. Oh, the one with Wolverine standing there with the claws,
right? And doing the come here.
It's been on a million t-shirts, a million posters.
Oh, yeah. But even just the simple stuff of him standing there talking to somebody, there's just something incredibly heroic about the way that Miller drew him.
And it's Frank Miller.
Yeah.
It's,
it's just
Sin City awesome. Frank Miller?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. This was probably the height before he became capitalized Frank Miller, back when he's just Frank Miller, comic artist, comic writer.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Not comic icon.
Now, he had to have a lot to do with this story because it had a lot of the kind of like
his tropes.
Yeah. The been betrayed by a dame and
the hand, the Japanese. He was very into Japanese culture. Mm-hmm. And then in his Daredevil, that's where he introduced the hand originally. So while he was only listed as a penciler in this, I'm fairly sure from the interviews I did that him and Chris Claremont did a lot of the co-plotting together.
That's cool.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, one more thing. The Star Wars Atari ads are amazing. Yeah, dude. That's all I have to say.
No, there's a Lifesavers ad in there, and it has like a game.
I know.
Ricochet game. I'm like, I have to play that.
I played it.
Where the hell are Lifesavers?
I totally played it. I'm not even going to lie.
I spent
maybe 5 minutes playing that. I was pissed when the very first one I chose was one. It's like, how did I? I'm like, of course I would choose the one.
I mean, that's a great thing about pulling out old comics is the ads and going back in time.
Yeah.
You know, a few days ago, a collection of comics came in. My dad and I were looking through them, and it had an ad for Johnny Unitas selling BB guns with his son. My dad's like, I don't even like comics, but I want it just for this ad.
Wow. That's awesome.
It's funny how ads and stuff have become such a cultural thing for us. You know, how many people watch the Super Bowl just for the commercials?
Yeah. Right. You know,
a lot of people.
A lot of people, I think.
When I do my Facebook invitation for our Super Bowl party, it's Super Bowl and commercial watching.
There you go. Yeah.
There you go. That's exactly it.
Well, remember, JP, when we did the comic book time warp thing on the Geek Life podcast?
That was amazing.
And we had the admin reading that, what was it?
It was a Slim Jim
ad from like 1968.
They somehow tied in werewolves to the ad. Mm. Like, and it was really...
Well, you have a Slim Jim on you in case you meet a werewolf.
Yeah, because
so he doesn't eat you and you can give him a Slim Jim.
It's a great episode. Go look it up. So which one are we talking about next, John?
Well, let's... Ratings on this?
Oh, ratings.
I'm probably going to give it about a 4 out of 5. But at the time, I probably would have gave it like a 6 out of 5.
Yeah.
When it came out.
I agree. 4 out of 5, solid 4 out of 5. Again, I think that it's a little hard and unfair to rate it out of timeline. For its time, I think this is way higher than that. But at this very moment, I think 4 out of 5 is awesome. Maybe even 4.5 out of 5. I really, I enjoy the hell out of this book.
Yeah, an easy 4.5 out of 5 for me. And they could have kept this one going. They could have easily stretched this story out a little bit more.
But I mean, what I think this one really did was it laid the groundwork for all the Wolverine stories that have come out since and out now. Because even the Max that we'll be talking about,
it's got shadows of the elements.
It has so many of these elements.
Yeah, it refers back to it. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this, and I didn't read them in order, but I don't know that necessarily mattered for me. So
or you didn't read the issues of this series?
No. I read them in order. I read.
Oh, okay.
No,
I was gonna be like, what?
I read them in derp order. No, I didn't. So everybody knows we're looking at three different. You want to call trades? We're looking at Wolverine Max 1 through 8, and then this little miniseries 1 through 4, and then Old Man Logan. Right. So, yeah. I read them sort of just
right. Okay.
I read the series correctly. But I didn't.
You could just check it.
Yeah. I didn't read them. You know.
Didn't read them chronologically.
Right.
I ripped up all the pages and threw them in the air and then read them in that way to see if they made the story.
And I read them as they lie.
That's right. But I would rate this highly because I think a good story is a good story. And I mean, easily 4.5 out of 5.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And there's so much here. It's not just a guy that goes and beats the crap out of people. I mean, there's heartbreak and there's such a rich life. In this small 4 comics that I would definitely recommend it to anybody, especially if you're a guy and you know, there's a lot of women, like life lessons in here for dealing with women, even if you don't have adamantium claws.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. There is that.
It's not a face that launched a thousand ships. I'll tell you that.
Alrighty. Moving on. We're going to review Old Man Logan, which is a little newer. It finished in 2009. And this, when it came out, took forever to come out.
Oh, really? So the distance between the releases of it as it was coming out in issues was just me?
Yeah, Joe and I were talking downstairs. I think this was about the first time I met Joe as he was coming in buying these issues.
Yeah. And Joe.
It was cover dated on this. It went from June 2008 to September of 2009.
That's 7 issues.
Yeah, it's about 7. And literally, they would print issues out of order. Because it was so long, you know, this was supposed to like finish at 72. So it would be like 68 and then issues 73 and 74 came out in order to fill because they don't want to have like 4 months with no Wolverine books out. And then the final part was originally supposed to be issue number 73, but they did it as a special. And Joe and I were talking about it took like 5 months for that to come out. Mm-hmm. It was enough that people had almost forgot that was the ending of the story.
Wow. Yeah. So then being able to read it all at once, like we did, is quite a privilege.
Yeah. I probably
a little less frustrating.
Yeah, I probably hadn't, before giving it a reread, had read it since the issues had come out.
Mm-hmm, really?
And reading it all in one chunk, I was surprised the brevity, how quickly I could read it and get through it.
Well, it was like maybe an hour.
Yeah. Versus, you know, I had to wait 2 months, 3 months in between each issue and it.
And then, like, 6 months for the last chapter.
Just a taste.
That would drive me fucking nuts because I am so instant gratification.
You're one of those guys that's like, no, I'll watch it when it comes out on video.
Like,
no,
I don't
want to have to wait.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Weekly episodes, it's some bullshit.
I never start reading Robert Kirkman books. He is awful about it.
Well, I'll just wait, you know. That's what I'm doing. Like, I have a subscription to Chew. I keep talking about Chew. And I have probably 2 of them in the queue that I haven't read yet. I'll wait till I have, like, 5.
The story arc.
Yeah. And then, because then I can get, I'll get my fix for a couple months or whatever.
You get to a pause and you're like, okay, I'm good.
This book for me, it was a challenge to read because it was so, a challenge in a good way, first of all. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. The art, there were panels that I'm like, oh my God, are you fucking kidding me? This is amazing. Like, there's early on, and I'll let you, you know, John, I'll let you sort of set the stage for the story, but there's a panel where one of the banners, kind of, he's looking down and he's got this look on his face like, are you kidding me? And you can just, there's no text, but you can see it. It's so well drawn. The art is phenomenal. Some of the best I've ever seen in any comic I've ever, you know, anything I've ever read. But the story is great. But it is, you know, this is, oddly enough, there's a bit of education in here for a newbie like me, where, you know, I'd see things and I go, I know what that is. Or, okay, well, I don't understand that, but maybe I'll figure it out. Right. And so, you know, I guess I live in a privileged time being the FNG or the fucking new guy, because, like, you know, at one point they're driving through the desert and there's this giant Loki, like huge, massive Loki skeleton with his crowned or his horned helmet. And there's a building that looks like it fell over on him. And I was like, oh, I get that. Cause I saw the, you know, I saw the Thor movie. So I know who Loki is, an Avengers movie. And so some of this, this is a comic book for comic book lovers. I kind of felt like,
oh, definitely.
But man, it is emotionally brutal.
Incredibly emotionally brutal.
For those who haven't read it, the story starts 50 years after the supervillains beat all the superheroes.
Yeah, after they basically got their shit together and were like, wait, there's more of us than there are of them.
Yeah, I think
there's 20 of us for each one.
Yeah, it's like basically the kids take over the school.
Yeah. And as it starts, Wolverine is now just an old farmer.
Oh, he doesn't want to be called Wolverine anymore. Yeah, he wants to be called Logan.
Yeah, only call me Logan.
Yeah, don't call me Wolverine. I'm not that guy anymore.
He's just
And there's a very good reason. Very good reason.
He's trying to make a living farming.
Which I would say we should not say anything about the good reason. Like,
okay. I totally
agree. Okay.
And basically, the Banners, which are the inbred Hulks, like two generations of inbred Hulks, control the part of the world where Wolverine lives in.
It's, which is basically California. He lives in Sacramento.
He lives in Sacramento. So, you know, I've driven past the causeway many times. You know, I'm like, that's where the farm's at.
I love Banner's explanation for why they started having incest. He's like, well, shit, man, nobody else could take the heat or whatever.
Yeah, it was. So who else was I going to go for except for my cousin, you know?
Right, yeah, nobody else could handle me. It's like, oh, all right.
So the Banners...
It's like, right.
Yeah, he was... They went a really redneck direction with him, which is so strange if that's supposed to be Bruce Banner.
It was supposed to be Bruce Banner at the end.
A very intelligent and... you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it was like, how in the hell did he get to be, you know, early Kyler from Squidbillies? Like, what happened?
Uh-huh. Well, the whole world is just, it's just
totally gone to shit.
It's just total. It's yeah, but you don't
all of a sudden get like a accent and start acting like a culture that has nothing to do with who you are.
If you've ever seen any of the Hulk comics where him or the Hulk has gone like totally feral, like when it's Banner, that's totally crazy. You can see that, like, it's an easy stretch for you.
Really? Okay. I guess I need to read more Hulk.
One of the most recent Hulk runs, Hulk and Banner actually are able to split each other away from each other. And Banner goes totally crazy without having the Hulk there for him. And he becomes a mad scientist and is making, you know, has this whole Island of Dr. Moreau thing going on.
Nice. That's awesome.
And five-assed monkey.
Pretty much. And he is totally fucking crazy and totally evil, and it is a really interesting sort of way to look at Banner. And you can, having seen this now, I'm like, okay, I can see where that came from.
Okay, that makes more sense, because that was probably one of the only things in the whole book that was felt a little out of left field to me.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the story, John.
So Logan cannot... get the rent to pay the Hulks their protection.
The money. Hulk gang, rent, as they refer to it.
So they show up there and they're like, okay, we're going to kick your ass. And there's this great scene where Wolverine's like standing there ready for it. And the guys are talking all this smack to him. And you see him pop the claws, totally get them, destroy them all. And then the next page is him. Just
getting
standing
his ass
there.
Yeah,
just
getting his ass.
Well, basically it was all in his mind. Right. And he said, you know, I'm a pacifist. Yeah.
I'm ready for my beating.
I'm ready for my beating, even though
I'll heal.
Yeah. Even though he knew he could take these people like in literally seconds.
Oh, yes, he can.
Mm-hmm. So after he wakes up from his beating, a blind Hawkeye shows up and offers him the great sum of $500 if he drives him across the country so he can deliver this package. The thing I found really amazing in the book was how little money things were. You know,
right?
It's like 80 cents for a toll, or you get eaten by ants. And there's these bodies of eaten people that wouldn't pay 80 cents. Mm-hmm. And then $500 to risk your life to drive across the country So you'll have...
For an entire month.
Yeah. Or not even that. It was like, it seemed like $500 was a great amount of money, like a year's worth of money.
Oh, yeah. And then at one point... At one point,
they drive for a month. Yeah.
Well, yeah, right. But I mean, at one point, they cross it. There's a point where Hawkeye is requesting more of him than he had originally offered. And he says, fine, I'll double your money. And he's like, all right.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, apparently that's a lot of money.
So off we go on this road adventure.
Yeah. It becomes Grumpy Old Men.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, if you just took a snapshot from this, you would almost not know who the hell they were. I mean, especially Hawkeye, you have no freaking idea who that is. But Logan still looks like Logan. He's got his mustache and his
mutton chops,
side spurs. Shit. Yeah, exactly. His hair is way short, though, so he doesn't have the classic ears, wings things going on off of his hair. But yeah.
Like John.
Sexy, sexy. No, it was interesting, though, because it was just, there was a couple moments where I stopped when I was reading and thought to myself, this is just, you know, to anybody else who wasn't reading this book, they came in and looked over my shoulders like, hey, this is just two old angry men driving in a little buggy across the desert. That's what this is.
In issue two, I thought it was really interesting. We go from Sacramento to San Francisco, and all the San Francisco landmarks no longer exist because the Moloids, who are these creatures that are controlled by the Mole Man, are literally eating cities. And
just sinking them into the ground.
Well, and they're talking about the Moloids like they're the immune system of the planet,
right,
and like that the planet is rotting, and they're just gonna eat it up and cleanse it somehow.
Start again. So I love this panel of Coit Tower, which living around here, you know, it's this giant skyscraper in San Francisco, literally about the size of my house, because so much of it has been eaten.
Right, and there's a guy hiding up top, just being like, "Help me."
So on this road movie, we go from San Francisco into, next we see Hammer Falls, which is what Las Vegas has become, because that was the last fight of the superheroes against the supervillains. And there's literally a group of people worshiping around Thor's fallen hammer, which I thought was this
powerful.
Amazing.
Unbelievably
super awesome. Powerful. Actually, that's one of the things I put on my note, is there's these amazing, impactful moments. And one of them is, it's a close-up of Thor's hammer in the ground, immovable, right? Because nobody can pick up Mjolnir except for Thor, correct?
Yeah.
Well, and anyone who's worthy. And there's only been him and Captain America that have been worthy.
Beta Ray Bill.
And Beta Ray.
Ah.
Wow. Didn't Hulk pick it up one time when he got real mad, but only like a little? Is that true? I mean, somebody told me that. I don't really know that. I didn't read that. So
somehow the Red Hulk was able to pick it up.
In outer space where there's no gravity.
And that made my friend Matt. Like, literally the maddest I've ever seen. He's like, what the f***? And Matt's an artist, so he drew me this great open sign where it's the Red Hulk holding Mjolnir, and he's like, and it says, impossibly open.
I remember that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's just, as they drive, you know, the more they drive across country, it's just, it gets bleaker and bleaker, and you're like, you know, where the heroes fell. And you can
there
see
are
these.
So many Planet of the Apes moments.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, the moment I'm talking about, if you for some freaking reason haven't seen Planet of the Apes, there's that moment where Heston realizes that he's on Earth because he sees the
you maniacs.
Right, yeah, he sees the
you damn dirty apes.
Right,
right, exactly. Where he sees the Statue of Liberty like destroyed and half under the ground, and it's just there's so many scenes like this where, if you're a comic book person, you're like, oh my God, whoa, that's what's left from this person. And it's like these unbelievably powerful, special, iconic things. And it's all just the rotting corpses and skeletons of it all. It's
One of my favorites was at Pym Falls. And there's the, you know, the city size skeleton of
Giant Man.
And
okay, that was what I didn't know. I knew Loki, but I didn't. Yeah. Okay, so I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to ask, who's the big dude?
Hank Pym, and they like drilled holes through his head so the highway could keep going. Because how the hell are you going to move a skull that big? They just left it.
Yeah, basically the first five issues of this, it was a road movie, a grumpy old man on the road with all kinds of crazy stuff happening.
Wacky adventures.
Being chased by dinosaurs. Who happened to get there because in the Marvel Universe, there's this world called the Savage Land in Antarctica where prehistoric stuff still exists. And it was now the villains, they wanted to have pet dinosaurs. And they got tired of having pet dinosaurs, so they let them run free.
Interesting parallel to the gangsters in Africa that now have pet hyenas.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, they have these hyenas on leashes like dogs. And, you know, hyenas are vicious.
Yeah.
They're vicious.
It's the same exact thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that I mean, there's the scene where Wolverine and Hawkeye are escaping, and they're being chased by people riding dinosaurs.
Right. Yeah.
And then later on, they're being chased by a T-Rex that's possessed by the Venom symbiote.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, just that, when I got to that part, I'm like, really, that's so great.
And I was wondering what they were going to do about it, and then it was like, oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you explain that to me? Well, is that some kind of known thing? I mean, we don't have to talk about it, but righteous.
Black Bolt, who is, as you know, one of John Foltz's favorite characters ever, if he were here, he could describe you in depth the history of Black Bolt and the Inhumans. So he's the king of the outer space mutants, basically.
Oh, okay.
And he has a voice so powerful that it can shatter a mountain with a whisper. And the Venom symbiote does not like sonics or fire. So, really powerful voice.
That's right. I remember that from Spider-Man.
So, if you zoomed in. So,
yeah, it was a very small little word. It said, stop.
Yeah.
And then, whom, and it just flies off of him, and he's over there. Yeah. Great scene.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome.
One of my favorite panels, the most brutal, and definitely one that I looked at, and I was like, oh my fucking God, this is amazing, is where we find out that Hawkeye fathered a child with somebody.
With Peter Parker's daughter.
His youngest daughter.
Right. And so now they have a daughter who is Spider-Girl or Spider. Yeah. You know, so, and she's kind
of. Was it ever clear to any of you guys whether or not she had any powers at all?
No.
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
It wasn't
either.
Clear, but it alluded to it, I guess.
I don't think she had any.
I don't think she had it. That's how I read it. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, yeah, because it was like they dressed up, because there was also a Daredevil and a Punisher, but you can clearly see towards the end of the story that the bad guy, I'm sorry, anybody listening, I'm sorry, because, you know, I'm FNG, but the bad guy from Captain America, Red Skull. Okay, the Red Skull, right? He has these cases filled with all of sort of his conquests.
That trophy room was
all, right?
I mean, my jaw hit the floor.
Yeah. When you read this, you're going to be like, you know, you will shed a tear for this.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he had Punisher shirt. But early on, and we come to a point where they meet the president, or no, they meet
the Kingpin.
The new Kingpin. And he's got Punisher and Daredevil tied up in this big arena, and they're going to be chowed down on by like raptors.
Right, but it's not the.
But
Punisher
it wasn't that.
It's like either I don't know if they talked about whether it was related to them. They were related.
No,
to
I think it was just
people just, guys, just, kids yeah, just yeah. dressed
they
up just, like that.
Yeah, they were just trying to. They were inspired. You know, it's this is a world now where there's no heroes. All the heroes are gone or in hiding, like Logan and Hawkeye. And so people yearn for their heroes. They drive through one town and there's people wearing costumes. You know, like. It was like they go through this sort of.
What was it? Was that Hammerfall?
That was Hammerfall.
Yeah, where basically it's almost as if it was like what do they say? They said that they have memorabilia and merchandise for the different superheroes long gone, and that the villains basically let it buy because they get a piece of the profits.
Exactly.
And they just don't care. I mean, it's just like it's such a unbelievable kick in the shorts. It's like, oh, wow. You'd think that objectively they'd be mad, but they're like, they have such complete and utter victory over the heroes that they're like, I don't care.
They won.
They really won.
Wear your Spider-Man mask, whatever.
Yeah, give me my $5.
Yeah, who cares? Yeah. And so there's people walking around in costumes and things like that. So I guess the point I was trying to make is that they yearn so much for sort of that, please come save us, please, that there's people that band together and, you know, they get captured. And so at one point, Hawkeye and this is where Logan and Hawkeye Or this is where Hawkeye tells Logan, "Look, I'll double your money, right? Please come help me save my daughter."
Right, because Hawkeye basically got sidetracked
because
his daughter was in trouble.
Exactly. Shows up. They kind of break her out of prison or the jail. And then she beheads Kingpin with a shotgun. Mm-hmm. That frame, that is one of the most
awesome,
well-drawn. I mean, look, you look at his face. His glasses are coming off. It's amazing. It's really, really
good. And it was all a setup for her to become the new Kingpin.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So she didn't have a hero bone in her body. Nope. It's like there are no more heroes at all.
There's just no sense.
Because when they say, her and her friends are going to go trying to take down the Kingpin, you're thinking to yourself, oh, the hero spirit lives on. Wrong. Mm-hmm. That's although I got kind of sense that her friends thought that she was legitimately trying to be, they didn't really say anything, but.
Well, they were sort of like, okay, where at least, when they were about to where's Ashley? What did you do with Ashley? Like there was some love there, but.
Yeah, but it was never clear whether or not they were actually good. And we all kind of assumed that they were doing it because it was the right thing to do, not because Ashley was power hungry.
But we were wrong.
Yeah, very wrong.
Yeah. Another scene that I really liked was when they're driving through South Dakota and you see the Red Skull's face on Mount Rushmore.
That was awesome.
All pristine.
That gets us to, New York, which is now called New Babylon. And you go there and you see statues of the Red Skull crushing the Avengers and other cool stuff. And the Red Skull has now been made the permanent president of the United States. So Wolverine...
Or Logan
still. Basically, the Red Skull had set up a double cross on Hawkeye that we find out the package was super soldier serum that he was trying to get to S.H.I.E.L.D. to create new superheroes. It turns out it was all just a ruse by the Red Skull to lure Hawkeye out and kill the last hero.
Mm-hmm. So we get all that super soldier serum.
Yeah, and to get all the super soldier serum. So we see this cool trophy room where the Red Skull has had all the fallen heroes stuff. And Wolverine comes to after being shot many times. They open up here. There's another trophy for you. And they're like, wait, he's healing. Wolverine still doesn't pop the claws. This is like issue 6 of this so far.
Yeah, he had absolutely vowed never to pop the claws again.
Right, right.
And him and Red Skull get in this giant fight. And Wolverine's able to beat the Red Skull by grabbing Captain America's shield and decapitating the Red Skull
with the shield. Which was awesome.
Yeah, but I love how they introduce Red Skull, too. He's wearing Captain America's hood.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Which is a great visual.
Oh, way.
Yeah. And talking about, do you think this is morbid? My wife doesn't like it.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like, ancient warriors used to wear the skins of their defeated foes. So this is very comforting for me.
But Wolverine, having done this, his still objective is, I need to get back.
I need to get back to my family. Well, I need to get paid.
So he steals the briefcase full of money, figuring this is my payment.
Right.
And takes an Iron Man suit.
Which is hilarious.
And starts flying back to...
pieces of an Iron Man suit.
Right. He's got the legs and the hands.
Yeah. Right.
And I think the helmet.
And he makes it 2,500 of the 3,000 miles back home before the suit gives out. And there's this great scene where he crashes and people are trying to plunder him. And he gets up. No, this is for my kid. And all that. And we get back to the farmstead 36 hours later. And he finds that the Hulks have come back and killed his family.
Because they got bored.
Yeah, because they got bored. It wasn't even that he was late.
Yeah. And he's like, I still have 2 weeks. And they're like, oh, they got bored and they came back. Which leads to probably the best 2-page spread. It just shows the panel before shows the grief on his page. And you turn the page and it's a double page spread of
snicked.
Which leads to the last scene of
that
Wolverine
was such a
with
good
his
payoff.
Claws out going, okay, now it's on.
Mm-hmm. And just the manic look in his eyes is awesome.
It's beautiful how this book, in a way, shares a similar through line with the Wolverine book from the 80s. In that, again, it's his constant and noble battle to just be a guy. To just be a good person, to just have love in his life, to just be happy.
I just want peace.
I just want to be left alone. I don't want to be, I don't want to do this animal thing. I don't want to be, having to kill everybody all the time. But the world conspires against him perpetually, be it women, be it the Hulk gang, be it some Japanese lord, be it crime bosses, be it supervillains. There's always, for some reason, he always has to schnicked,
In my notes, I put that. Very much in spite of himself, he's very naive to a lot of things. As long as he's lived and as old as he is, he still has this naiveness to him. And I keep thinking back to when Tom Sawyer convinces the other kid, like Huckleberry Finn, to paint the fence for him or, oh, no, this is great. It's so great. Right. And then he gets into it. But his saving grace is the fact that he can always just beat the crap up out of whatever it is that, like that sucked him into it in the first place. He's always got that emotional battle. I will say that I don't feel like the reason why he never pops his claws until the very end of this is because of any battle internally that he has. I think that it's a reaction. His reasoning is so brutally heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, as a matter of fact, as we're talking, I'm scrolling through the comics and I get to this particular panel and I just go, oh, fuck. Right? Because it comes down to a head. You got to read it because it's so good. But it is just...
We're dancing around it because it's such an amazing reveal. Yeah, I don't want to give it away.
It's very spoilerific.
Yeah.
Well, it's that entire issue.
Yeah, it's an entire issue.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you which one.
And all the other issues had led up to that point.
Mm-hmm. And he finally tells Hawkeye, all right, this is how they broke me.
You want to know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm broken, right? Because Hawkeye... And that's what I loved about Hawkeye is like, come on, man, where's Wolverine? Where's, you know,
I thought you were just pretending.
Yeah, I thought this was like, I thought you were just being.
The hell did they do to you, man?
Right, exactly. And he doesn't really ever take it seriously. Though I will say, this is the most serious Hawkeye I've ever seen. He was very, of course, this is, you know, much older, wiser, blind, and he's still badass as fuck blind.
He's still badass. And the good thing about Hawkeye in this is that he is your reference point. He is the only hero left. And he still carries the torch.
Mm-hmm.
He still has that hero in him.
But you think that he's not because you think that they're...
Well, because they talk about him running drugs and basically having to give in to this new world to survive. But obviously because of his reasons for getting Wolverine to help him, or Logan, to help him get all the way to New York or New Babylon, is that he wants to revive heroes again. You know, that he still has the heart of a hero. He still doesn't give up. And that's really just awesome.
And then, so the final part is Wolverine taking out the Hulk gang and Bruce Banner. And when I was talking to JP about it, when we were talking last week, he was like, I thought it was weird that it was the Hulk. And I'm like, well, if you think about it, Wolverine was introduced in Hulk 181. So it kind of brings it the whole full circle that when you're first introduced to Wolverine, it's fighting the Hulk. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of the last Wolverine story, and he's fighting the Hulk. Which it's like a nod to the
history, I think, for sure.
That's great, because I didn't know that.
And that scene where he goes and just massacres, the whole issue where he massacres the Hulk gang is awesome.
You are right there with him emotionally. Oh, you feel so good about it.
It's so justified. Oh, yeah. There's no tear that one's eyes out.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought it was actually creepier that when we encounter Bruce Banner, he's this little old shriveled up man. We're expecting to see the Hulk, but it's actually Bruce Banner, this little old shriveled up man. And
so vile.
And then he beats the shit out of the Hulk out of Wolverine, because he essentially has the Hulk power and doesn't need to change. And I thought that was really, really fun.
That, and I thought that it was great how it turns out that all the things that were happening, the fact that Wolverine's family was constantly being badgered by the Hulk gang, and that they came back and killed them early because, quotes, they were bored, is really just an excuse for Banner to have another good fight because he's so bored. Because it wasn't the Hulk gang that was bored, it was Bruce. He was tired of having nobody good to smash.
Yeah.
and was tired of, you know, these hillbilly, inbred, dumb people around him. Basically said, I want you to kill them so I can start over. Which led to, I thought, a pretty interesting point when Wolverine ends up, spoilers, Wolverine ends up killing Bruce Banner, and there's one baby left.
And he takes baby Bruce.
He takes the baby.
Mm-hmm.
But for at least a page, it alludes to he's going to kill the baby because there's a shadow of his.
You took my children. Why don't I take yours?
Right. And the panel is the baby sitting there with, like, kind of looking up, and it's the shadow of the claws over him. So there's three shadows over his body.
You know? Yep, absolutely.
JP or Joe, have you guys read Lone Wolf and Cub at all?
Yes, I have.
Did you catch the little thing, you know, that Wolverine is Lone Wolf?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That was very cool.
Now, I'm wondering, is this considered going into the 2099 universe?
No, it's a complete different universe. I don't know if you
never did anything more with this, did they?
Well, they kind of did, but you had to pay really, really close attention to it. Hmm. Mark Millar, at the same time he was doing this, was writing Fantastic Four. And in Fantastic Four, you see an even older version of Wolverine with his son, the Nerd Hulk, they call him. And nobody picked up on that until later on, that was another 40 years in the future, Wolverine and the kid Hulk all grown up.
Okay.
So, but I mean, it was only in there for just a few pages, and it never was like made out like this is Old Man Logan and all that. It's just one of those like little Easter eggs that if you paid attention to the simultaneous runs, you kind of got.
Okay.
That's really cool.
Because this, you know, even judging by the map they had at the beginning of each issue, there was so much more to this universe.
Yeah, it's a fully realized world that, you know, they spent a lot of time.
So much more they can do. And I
and that's one of the reasons why it works so well, is because there's so much.
Yeah.
So do you want to give ratings?
I mean, this one to me is probably a good 5.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it's probably to me it's the quintessential Wolverine, the quintessential future story.
It was post-apocalyptic. It had all these Easter eggs and nods to Marvel culture. It has Wolverine, arguably one of the most popular superheroes ever. You know, it's just so good. And all those moments of the, just the, oh man, I don't even know how to describe it. I'm losing words. It's amazing.
It's definitely worth checking out. We have the regular trade paperback that's been out, and then Marvel just released a new omnibus size one that collects Old Man Logan and Mark Millar's first run on Wolverine, what was about 12 issues, called Enemy of the State, that he did with John Romita Jr., and those were collected together.
That one was pretty good.
Yeah. So both fun things. Anything else you guys want to say about Old Man Logan before we move on?
Well, this was Millar, like, straight off of Kick-Ass, right?
It was around there. I mean, he just finished Civil War with McNiven, so it was their follow-up to that. And he was writing, I believe, Kick-Ass, the first Kick-Ass at the same time. He was doing Fantastic Four with Brian Hitch. And then he was doing the 1985 miniseries.
Oh, yeah.
And then the 1985 Old Man Logan and Fantastic Four all kind of tied in together without you even realizing it at the time. So it was a nice, fun little Easter egg thing if you were following, you know, what he was doing at the time.
One of the best I've ever read. I mean, not that I've read as many books as you guys, but every single panel is beautiful. The only thing that I found annoying in this whole entire story was the bat, or not the bat, but I'm sorry, the spider buggy thing.
Thank you. I'm so glad you said that.
It's so cheesy. The only thing, I just felt like it was the only thing that wasn't drawn consistently well, and it felt more like a plot. Would you call it trope? It felt like more, or it's like in the Tolkien. It's sort of like when people make fun about Tolkien, where like when he needs to solve a problem, he just brings in eagles, right? And so,
well, I mean, just for me, like I couldn't help myself but hearing like the really deer, 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 when they were like riding on the side of the building. It's just like, this is, I mean, okay, fine, but this is silly. I mean,
right. But the spider buggy always, even when it was introduced in Spider-Man, it was always something that was silly.
Okay.
Yeah. And to see it like this new souped up, I can drive 300 miles an hour up walls and all that, I thought was, while it was cheesy, it was still kind of fun.
Oh, I mean, it was very fun, but it definitely felt a little bit divergent from the tone.
It's out of place of the for the theme of this whole story. Oh, it seems
the spider buggy has always been out of place.
Okay, good. All right. Then that's nothing new.
But it's not, I mean, saying that, seriously, like, this was an engrossing read, and this is it's a lot of reading, and I read it like nonstop. I just couldn't get enough of it. And even as it just beats the crap out of you in a lot of ways, but there's so much beauty in the art and, you know, the storytelling and the world building. It happens right in front of you, and you just get to see it. You don't have to read it.
Mm-hmm.
So there.
Definitely like the essence of the visual storytelling that comics do, you know, showing you the story and telling you at the story at the exact same time in two different ways that coalesce. It's, you know, it's exactly why we read comics.
Yeah. I would say that in this, compared to Max and compared to the miniseries, there's almost no inner monologue, which is something that I think runs through Wolverine's, the other two, there's tons of inner monologue, which is how he kind of, that's how he talks to the reader. You know, that's how he's sort of like, you know, I'm the best.
Definitely in the other two comics, for sure. I think that perhaps that was an expression of his sort of just give up, disconnected, I'm defeated sort of thing.
Well, I'm Logan,
because he was so... Mm-hmm. I mean, there were scenes where Hawkeye was having a fight for his life, and Logan was just chilling in the spider buggy, just being like, all right, well, when you get down...
I didn't sign up for this. I just signed up to be a navigator.
I'm just sitting here. And so they're over there fighting and almost dying, and Logan's just like... mm-hmm. you know, just chilling.
I got the passenger seat.
Yeah, so I really think that perhaps it makes more sense for him to not be having all of this internal monologue that we're in on because he's just checked out.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, that's a great point.
We're ready to move on to Max?
Yeah. So, I mean, for this, all of us give it, you know, it is also a modern classic.
Hell yeah.
Indeed.
The Wolverine by Claremont and Miller as well. So moving on.
Before we move on, I would say this. If you're coming in new, I wouldn't read this first. I would definitely read this. Definitely read it, but don't read it as your first
Wolverine. Not your first Wolverine.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I think you need to understand the world a little bit more. I'm not saying go back 30 years and read everything, but I don't know that this would be a starting point for me, though. Mm-hmm. It's a phenomenal comic. The reveal wouldn't mean
nearly as much if you didn't right. know. Yeah.
The story why. Still works if you don't know totally, anything about totally. X-Men, but it is exponentially more powerful. It is exponentially more impactful if you know not just a lot about Wolverine and the X-Men, but about the Marvel Universe as a whole. This pulls from so many different dark corners of the Marvel Universe, and you know. It's just amazing how many different things they were able to spin into one story.
Which may give you some of the reasons why it took so long for each one to come out. Because there's an immense amount of history that you would have to know as the writer for this, with all of the little things that they throw in there.
Yeah, they're opening themselves up to a lot of like, that's not how the person would act, or what's happening here.
You know? Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Well, everybody was... There wasn't anybody left, but
right.
But still, but
I mean, the fans.
Yeah, still, yeah. There's you have to. They had to know what they were talking about. So I imagine there was a lot of reading on their end. But
well, I have to say, I've been really excited to talk about Max.
Yeah, normally when we do these, I give recommendations for everyone else to check out. And this one, JP actually brought to me and said, "Have you been reading Wolverine Max?" And I said, "No, I haven't." But when he told me about it, the first five issues. Story arc had just finished, so I was able to track those down and read it in one shot, and it worked really well. And I thought the writer of this is really good. I've never like known him as a comic, so I googled his name, and it turns out he's a crime novelist with 14 novels that he's written. So well,
that makes a lot of sense.
So while not well known is someone who's just into comics, you know, he's an accomplished writer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jinx, show me soda.
You owe me a beer or whatever. You owe me a non-alcoholic drink of your choice.
So I'm going to let JP get into it and tell us about how the story goes, and I'll sit back and actually give commentary on what I thought.
Deal. Well, first of all, Max, and maybe I'll have you. Well, yeah, Max, I'll reiterate what these guys explained to me. Max is, there's more than just Wolverine Max. Max is a series of different books that have had The Punisher and Deadpool. And
it's basically Marvel's mature reader line. Yeah. In there, you can say words like fuck and shit nudity. And cock.
And there can be nudity. There can be much more violence.
Yeah.
And I can remember thinking to myself when I was first told what that was the first thought was awesome. Then the second thought was, oh, wait, are they going to go, hey, this is an opportunity for us to tell the exact story that we'd like to tell, unedited and pure. Or are they going to go, hey, this is an opportunity for us to have copious amounts of nudity and blood and violence that's not really necessary, but we can put it in there, so why not? And so I was kind of interested and concerned about how they were going to go with it, and I felt like it was very tasteful. I felt like it was just exactly what the writer and artists wanted to say.
It's a good balance, right?
A clear picture of their vision. And there's a definite sense of that throughout this whole book, is that it's uninhibited storytelling, which is really neat and rare. So Wolverine Max starts out with Wolverine in the ocean outside of Tokyo. He had been on a plane headed to LA and it blew up, and he wakes up, and in classic Wolverine fashion, he doesn't remember a fucking thing because Wolverine always forgets shit. And that's just kind of how he rolls. And so anyway, so he's there. He's having these kind of weird flashbacks and recognizes this one girl and, you know, pulls her up to him and is trying to help. And then the shark comes out of nowhere and eats the shit out of her and kills her. And then he like doesn't have any legs. And so he ends up back at a hospital in Tokyo. And this is one of the funniest things in the whole comic book, is they pull back the sheet and he has legs now.
Right, right.
And he didn't have legs when they first pulled him out of the water. And the lady like looks at the sheet, looks at him, looks at his sheet again and goes, This says you didn't have legs. And he goes, oh, it must be a mistake.
Must have been a mistake. But I will say, if Jaws started out with Wolverine in the movie, it would have been about 15 seconds long.
Right.
Because he bone sauces the shark. I mean, he turns him into fin soup right there in the ocean.
Ass.
He just...
So awesome. Anyway, so basically what ends up happening is that he spends the first arc, which is what we're talking about, right? We're not talking about the later stuff yet.
Yeah, we're the first five issues first.
So the first arc takes place in Japan. And basically the whole point of it is him trying to figure out WTF. What the f*** happened to me?
Who am I?
Why was I on the plane?
Why did it blow up?
Was I involved in the blowing up? What was going on? Was I trying to save them? Did I plant the bomb? Like, he doesn't know what the hell's going on, but he does know that he has these claws for some reason, and he freaking seems to heal really good and doesn't really know what the hell's going on.
And he keeps having flashbacks and memories for things that happened like 200 years ago.
Yes, and that's that is the beauty of this. And that is the reason why I first was like, because you know, it's you know, you come into the comic shop, you see something that looks amazing and the cover looked amazing because it was a Wolverine holding onto the front of a plane.
That's four.
Four. Okay, fine.
That was the first thing I saw.
Yeah, and I came in and I bought the first four issues. I was like, I want this.
Yeah, all the cover art is fantastic.
Yes. I want that full size on my wall.
But so basically what's going on is he spends the next four issues or so in Japan trying to figure out what happened. And slowly but surely his memory comes back, as it tends to. But what's brilliant is that his memory is slowly coming back, but what comes back clearly and first is memories from hundreds of years ago.
Right.
In the same area, in the same, dealing with the same clans that are now like Yakuza at this point. And on top of that, Victor Creed, who is Sabretooth, is in his dreams, in his memories, as well as accosting him and causing trouble with him in modern times. First of all, he doesn't remember who he is, so he doesn't realize that he has lived that long. And so he's thinking to himself, like, how am I having these memories? And this guy's in his memories, and he's now, like, what is happening? This is crazy. So that's really, really cool. And it's kind of a brilliant way for us to actually get to see some real Wolverine in a kimono fighting people with swords in old Japan, which is awesome.
Right. He's like
all kinds of awesome.
He's a mercenary, right?
So we actually get to see Wolverine in old Japan being a badass, which was amazing. But beyond that, it actually continues on with this story.
Was it because he was wearing a dress? Is that why you liked it so much? Sorry, John.
I'm a complete Japanophile. I'm just going to be honest with you right now. Complete Japanophile.
You have an Asian persuasion.
I just love all things Japan. Ever since I was little, and like there was a like JAL, because I live in Napa, and there's a JAL training center, and there was a kid in my school who was the son of one of the guys that was going there.
Ah.
And so I became friends with this Japanese kid and like learned about Japanese candy and Japanese movies and Japanese comics and Japanese animation and was like, this is the best thing ever.
Right.
And then he moved away and like left and like forever. I've been like, oh. So I've just been into Japanese stuff since forever. So yes, for me, the moment that it was like, this is taking place in Japan and they're having flashbacks to old Japan, I'm just like sold. So that like right away spoke directly to me. But beyond that, just the way they tell the story is really amazing. It's an interesting way of a progression through remembering the past, and then slowly but surely remembering the more recent past, and it all works together. And the whole time, Victor Creed, who has some sway over him because he's remembering them working together 200 years ago and not remembering their interactions towards the end of their time together long ago, and definitely not remembering their interactions more recently, isn't sure if he's working with or against Victor.
And I liked how when he would start to remember and he was talking to Victor Creed, like Sabretooth would go ahead and like hit him in the head and give him more brain damage.
Right. Yes.
And say if you keep going against me, I will make it so you can't remember anything.
Right.
Right. And then don't you remember we were working together? You planted that bomb. And he's like, no, I wouldn't do that. Wait,
right.
Would
so
I?
He eventually tries to convince Wolverine that he is the guy that planted the bomb on the plane.
Sure.
Now, okay. Early on, I said there's a part of me that thinks that, or I was slightly confused because there's this animalistic side to Wolverine, right? Then there's this sort of very humane side to Wolverine. And it seems like he's always battling between having to bring out the claws. Like it's always a last resort. He wants to be human. He doesn't take any joy in the killing.
And well, that's how he ended up in Japan long ago. Why. He was doing a monk thing, basically. He shaved his head and was just chilling. It was not fighting.
So in this series, Max, there's a moment where Creed kills some guys. And you can tell it's given him a rager, right? He loves killing and he's getting off on it. And
Creed.
Yeah. Right. And that's why I keep saying, I think Wolverine knows he's really good at this and maybe perhaps he was even built for this, but he doesn't really take necessarily any more pleasure than perhaps just, okay, I'm good at this. And, you know, you always take pleasure in your success, right? Like, so to a certain degree, but
it's kind of a reserved pleasure, if any.
There's no primal pleasure. Like, he doesn't get off on killing people.
Not the same as Creed. No.
Yeah, right. Creed drinking the blood out of a severed head.
Right. Right. That's what I'm getting at. That's why, sure, I feel like, you know, until you explain to me, yeah, and by all means, you have a far more, your knowledge of this is far deeper than mine. And, you know, I'm the new guy. So, but that's what I read it as, is like, you know, he really doesn't like kind of doing this, or he would just, one, you know, obviously he has to rein it in or he would run rampant. And I think there's a great, I think that's where they display, rather, you know, the difference between him and Sabretooth, which I think they're sort of like opposites of each other in a way.
Sabretooth takes the role of the
Yukio.
They've played up Sabretooth and Wolverine as being kind of the two sides of the same coin.
Sure. Where they share similar powers.
Sabretooth
too, right?
Is, yeah, exactly. And Sabretooth is, I embrace all this. I love killing. I love maiming. I love chaos. Where Wolverine is, I have the side, but I don't like to tap into it. I'm a man. I'm not an animal. Whereas Sabretooth is, I'm all about an animal. I just do my base desires.
It's so awesome to talk about these in a row, because I was reading them and thinking about them and enjoying them separately and having my own thoughts and opinions about them, but wasn't comparing them. And there is such a strong theme of fighting your animal nature and being a dignified human being, mm-hmm, of peace and choice instead of just animal nature and urge throughout all these comics. And it's neat to see how the writers place characters in Wolverine's world right in front of him that reflect the part of him that he doesn't want to indulge, that he doesn't want to let run rampant and control him. You've got Yukio in the old one. You've got Victor Creed in this one. They are like that. They are bloodthirsty. They do indulge that. Right. And they try and collect him into that, and he's always fighting it. Mm-hmm. He's always fighting it. Even though he doesn't remember whether or not he was a guy who did indulge in it, there's something deep down that doesn't want to let him do that.
I mean, imagine if you woke up tomorrow and you had some, whether it's claws out of your hands, but you have the ability to basically, at will, kill anybody you want. Would you do it? Would you, I mean, it's sort of that question, like, if you could get away with murder, would you do it? If murder was legal, would you kill somebody, right? If murder was legal, would you kill somebody? I think it would be very hard for us to answer, yes, I would. You know, what would be the conditions? So imagine, you know, it reminds me of this, there's the lyrics from one of my favorite songs from Slayer, and it's, blood's cheap, it's everywhere. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like there's so much blood. There's, you know, at some point the luxury becomes a burden. And I think that's where we are with Wolverine is.
Yeah.
He's definitely. Sort of like, oh, I got to do something else. And so I think perhaps there's a little bit of that in there as well.
Down the road, Justin, if you want to explore if you woke up tomorrow and you can kill someone and get away with it, there's this book called 100 Bullets. That's the whole premise of the book. Oh. So maybe down the road, we'll review the first couple of those.
As long as it doesn't have big words, man, I'll read it. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, man. So I think just in a nutshell, the story, basically Wolverine gets to where he remembers everything. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Victor Creed is on the wrong side of the law and the wrong side of Wolverine. And it's all about trying to find this sword that Wolverine hid and stole, you know, again, for his lady love long, long ago.
Which turns out he was stealing from her clan, if I remember correctly.
He's tricked into,
you know, thinking that he's stealing it for her, not knowing that he's actually stealing it from her family.
Right, exactly. It gets honestly a little complicated about,
right,
you know, who has their interest in what and what they want to have happen and all that. But inevitably it ends up boiling down to they're looking for the sword, they think he knows where it is, that sort of thing. And so there's just that final fight between Logan and Creed, where they're in the cemetery,
right,
and the sword is buried with, was it the girls?
Mariko.
With Mariko.
Which I think was brilliant that they bring that back into the story from 82.
Yeah.
And actually,
of course,
you know,
though, in 82, it was in 82 instead of in hundreds of years ago.
But I was waiting to walk in the door tonight and have John go, did you get it? Did you see that? You know? And I was like, because I thought it was great how they did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you guys think of the art for this one?
Okay, so when he starts to remember stuff in the first book, right? You have the normal art, and then you turn the page, and it's slowly him remembering things. And
it's
the
a different
art is completely different.
Yeah, it's a different artist. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was also so I took it as not only being a different artist, but I took it as this is what my memories look like, and
right, that's how exactly. I'm, you that's know, what they were like, doing, which was awesome.
Yeah. Now there was some art that I didn't really necessarily appreciate later on. I think it was in later books where I didn't think it was as good.
6, 7, and 8, I believe, had a different artist.
I didn't like the art in those at all. I thought they were, you know.
This wouldn't be the normal art style I'm into, but I thought it fit with the story very well.
Yeah.
And I didn't have an issue with it. And the story was great enough to overcome what I didn't necessarily like with the art. And we've had this discussion before that good writing and bad art will still give you a great comic.
Absolutely.
But bad writing and great art will give you a shitty comic.
Absolutely.
No matter what. So I appreciated what they did. It just wasn't necessarily my cup of tea.
So it didn't really speak to you. It wasn't your style.
I mean, it was fine for the story. It fit with the story.
Are you talking
very
about
well?
The memory stuff? Because there's a very clear delineation in this particular book between the art of his memory when he's remembering back and you know, the normal storytelling, which it's pretty good. But it's not as good as – it's definitely not as good as Old Man Logan.
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, Old Man Logan and Frank Miller, I mean, that's, those are the, you know, top – the cream of the crop kind of. And I had never heard of these creators before. And that's saying something for me again.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think that artistically, it reminded me a lot of a noir type feel where there was very little detail. It was major use of shadow. And I guess that's not fair to say there's very little detail. So it reminds me of when we were talking on the Kaiju cast of Godzilla Gangsters and Goliaths about how it had that noir feel to it. And one thing that always stands out to me in noir comics is that there's more shadow than like actual nitty-gritty detail. More often than not, eyes will be covered with the shadow from the eyebrows and the forehead and things like that. And that's very much how this is drawn. And one thing that I noticed that I didn't like about the art style in this is that there were several different times where if it weren't for Wolverine's very obviously unique and Wolverine attributes, he looked a little bit like a different person.
Yeah,
you know, there was a bit of that. Sometimes the faces didn't look like the same guy, but it was obviously him because of the muttons and the hair and the look, you know. But the minute detail, I don't know, it wasn't as consistent as I would have liked.
I was just put off a little bit by the flashback scenes, not realizing when I was reading that it was two different artists. Once I realized what they were doing, you know, I thought the artist that did the current scenes, I thought that was... You know, I thought that was fine. Mm-hmm. It fit. But then when the flashback scenes, I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah, it was weird.
And
it
then,
was way different.
You know, then I realized what was going on and read it that way. And it made a little bit more sense. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of jarring, just the difference of the styles all at once.
Now, I think they used a couple different artists for the flashback scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a couple of them worked really well. And some of them not so much.
The scene that stands out to me artistically, hands down, is a scene where Creed, which Joe later told me is something that Creed likes to do, stabs Wolverine's eyes.
Oh, I know.
You can't see.
That's like towards the end.
Right. Yeah. Well, so there's this one scene, and basically it starts with almost complete blackness. And you can see just barely the outlines of just the shadow or highlight of Creed walking off with the sword, triumphant, having seemingly defeated Wolverine. And then it gets kind of closer and you start to see the claws coming in from the sides. And then as it gets closer and closer, it gets more and more detailed. And then pretty soon you see the claws coming right up into the picture and it's Victor Creed's face turning around and he's got his fangs out and he's yelling. And at that point you realize it's like, holy shit, this is what Wolverine is seeing. It's this bloody, slowly healing and getting more and more clear as it heals at this crazy rapid rate, but just covered in red and blood. It's that image. And this one page made me completely fall in love with this art style. Like, I freaking love that page. It's just brilliant.
Well, this is a great scene regardless, oh, right? But yeah, I think it's really well drawn. And the fact that, you know, as you read each one, he's kind of going through, like, I could still find him because I could smell him. I see faint, you know, shadows of it. You know, I can sense them. And I will say this, okay. All along these books, Wolverine always talks about being able to smell and sense. And he's digging this sword up out of the ground. And the next, like the very next scene is Creed behind him. And I'm like, why didn't he sense that? There's a little bit of a hole there for me.
It must have been like the crypt stank or something.
Maybe. I don't know. Because he didn't actually, it's just buried there. It's not actually in the coffin. True. So as much as this was really like a really great story, like that for me was a little bit of a hole. Like you could have, I mean, especially with that much history.
Yeah.
You could have sensed him. I mean,
this was a very enjoyable comic, but I don't think that it stacks up in comparison to the other two we've been reviewing.
But it is really good.
Yeah. But it's very
that little one thing.
Oh, yeah.
Does not ruin the entire. You know, that's.
Well, you know, if you think about it, Creed has the similar powers, so he probably knew to stay downwind.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, there's parts of the story that I don't know anything about Creed, except for that.
He's basically Wolverine, but like finger claws instead of claw claws.
There's like 30 seconds of him in the X-Men movie, I think, at some point, played by like a wrestler or something like that.
Actually, Liev Schreiber did a great
story. Yeah, I thought that was actually the strongest point of the Wolverine movie, was him as Sabretooth.
Really the only enjoyable part of that.
Oh, is that who he was supposed to be? I thought he was like a brother or something.
No, Liev Schreiber was...
It's revealed later on that there is a relationship between Wolverine and Sabretooth.
No, because his brother in Origins is Dog.
Which I always thought was Sabretooth.
I did too, but they only recently brought Dog back.
Dog's a dog, though.
No, that's not in Wolverine.
Man. Oh my fucking god!
I know we're crossing streams here. Okay.
So. I can't cross the streams. I can't get to a Comic Con because I'm just gonna start punching fucking writers.
That was a really funny thing I noticed when in the next story arc when he adopts a stray dog and he names a dog. I'm like, wait a second, his brother is actually named Dog. Yeah. So
I did not know that.
Easter eggs abound in comic books. It's nothing but Easter eggs.
The only little nitpicky thing I had with the end of the first five issues was I thought that it wrapped up way too quickly.
Oh, really abrupt.
And like I almost needed, like it could have been like another issue of wrap up, but instead we got it in like two pages. And that was like my only.
I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges about story arcs or stories that have characters that have lost their memory is that the writer has complete and free reign as to how fast it comes back. And like if you look up cases of amnesia, it's kind of all over the place how it comes back and in what amount and what rate. And so it's like writers can very justifiably be like, and now he remembers everything. It's time
my problem
to wrap
wasn't
it up.
Even that. It was after the climatic fight between him and Sabretooth. It's like one page of, and now John Collinsworth, who possibly was the vigilante Wolverine, has escaped the country, and Victor Creed is now arrested for these crimes. Right. It was like one page.
Oh, yeah, and then it's done, and he's like, all right, now I'm going to L.A., maybe I'll find something there. I was headed there anyway, maybe I'm supposed to go there.
I would have liked to seen a little bit more, but that's just probably me being...
But that was almost kind of how it was with the 80s Wolverine one, where it was like, and done.
And then, so after this five, they did another three-parter for the second storyline with Wolverine in Hollywood, which I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I enjoyed it. I'm continuing to read the book. I still like it, but I didn't like it anywhere near as much as I like this arc.
It wasn't very Wolverine-y.
Are you talking about when he meets the redhead on the beach?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Continually bad decisions around redhead.
I would have made a bad decision with her.
Yeah.
Several times. I would have made as many bad decisions in a day as I could.
And she was a porn actor, so she could have... I kind of like some very interesting.
Yeah, so he meets this girl, and like he gets kind of swept up into the whole like her drama, and there's a bad guy, and he kind of gets involved with the bad guy, and it's sort of a little bit, why is he the bad guy? Why does he have all these guards? What is he really?
He just kind of inserted himself into someone else's mess. Is really what happened.
Well, again, it's almost like, you know. Again, I keep the way that I look at it is like Wolverine's like this little kid that wanders into something, and ends up. Luckily, but not really by luck, being able to, you know, sort of beat his way out of it, right? There's always some sort of revenge that ends up happening, which it's not bad. It's just that seems to be a recurring theme. And when I say little kid, I mean, I kind of go back to the sort of like, you know, there's this just little tiny hint of naivete. And he even admits it to a certain degree, like, well, this is another bad decision with a woman. Or, you know, I know what I'm getting into, but I'm doing it anyway. Exactly.
Although once the gangster killed Wolverine's dog,
that was it.
Uh-huh.
You know,
it was on.
There was going to be a bunch of people dying. That was
what was coming. There's always a catalyst, and in this case, it was a dog. But he was a cool dog, so I mean, you know.
So, final thoughts on Wolverine Max?
Very entertaining. Not at the same level as the other comics we talked about, but definitely worth a read. You know, I'd say give three point five out of five.
I'd say like a solid 3 out of 5. It's nice to come back to and read. You know, in solid story arcs, and it's good. It's good. Pick it up. Don't make me quit stumbling.
This week's readings for me were a revelation. I mean, I thought I knew about Wolverine, and now I know 1,000 times more than I did. And
I love him as a character.
Well, but it also makes me even more, you know, because I remember hating the first movie, and now I'm worried, you know, so.
I think everyone hated the first movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't stack up to what I would expect.
Well, I think that the biggest problem people had with it is that it was so divergent from so many different comics left and right. It was just like.
And even so divergent from the movie continuity as well.
Yeah. It just flew in the face of everything that came before, whether it was the movie universe or the comic universe. And it didn't even do a really good job of this new direction it went. Yeah. It's just kind of like, what? You know?
Yeah.
So I'm going to be my own thing, but all these great characters I introduced.
And then silent Deadpool? Really? Like, what?
Yeah,
that was a mess. That was a hot mess.
Was Deadpool in it? See, that's how bad.
I don't even remember.
Yeah, no, it's a mess. That movie's, though, you don't need to remember. It's not worth your time.
And I don't think there's much that's going to be referenced in it in the movie we see tomorrow night.
I think it's going to be like Highlander 2. They're going to be like, just pretend that didn't happen.
Well, I just hope that it doesn't end up at, you know, the commercial kind of alludes to a giant robotic samurai, and I hope that's not the climax.
It's not a robotic samurai. It's the character is Silver Samurai.
I saw a regular samurai and the robotic samurai. That's why I think it's the Shiva robot.
We will find out.
Shiva robot?
I don't know, dude. I don't know.
Does it give kisses? Shiva. Well, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it either way. I like Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. I think that maybe his shape isn't quite right, but he has a good energy about him.
He's a great actor.
Yeah.
Make a suggestion as to who they could have put in his place.
Oh, no. I mean, I think that he is great. I just, you know, he just needs to be a lot shorter.
Loves being Wolverine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was fighting for a long time for there to be a R-rated Wolverine movie, like really wanting that to happen. And that was sort of what people were thinking this is going to happen. I don't think that's what this one is, though. This is PG-13, right?
I don't know, but you could get me in. I could go on a whole tirade about the MPAA.
Oh, so. Let's not go there. Well, why don't we... I think we're close to a close for the day.
In fact, let's end before that.
On that note.
All right, guys. And next week, we are going to be missing one of our James.
I'm sorry.
And we're going to be replacing that with a Sean. My brother-in-law, Professor Sean O'Rourke, will be coming in, and we're going to be discussing J. Michael Straczynski's Midnight Nation. One of my favorite books that I haven't read in about 10 years. So
I'm reading it now.
Yeah, it'll be nice to check it out and see if it still holds up.
Awesome.
I'll miss you guys. I'll be here in spirit. Just insert a bunch of stupid stuff, like stupid questions, and that'll be just like I'm here.
And some metal stuff.
There you go. Bang your heads. Give me devil horns. And read comics.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Later.
Good night. Later. Later.